guest today is Chris Love. Chris, how you doing?
Hey, doing well. Long time no see.
Yep. Welcome back to the show.
That's good to be back.
It's good to be here at the New York Code, or is it the Code Camp NYC? What's the name of this conference? Where
The hashtag's Code Camp NYC. I just call it the New York Code Camp.
New York Code Camp here in Midtown Manhattan.
I think this is probably my fifth or sixth time coming
up
here.
Yeah. This is only my second. I had a good time last year. Are you, you're speaking today, later on today.
Last slot today, and I'll be talking about modern web development and enterprises.
What do you mean by that? I know what web development is. I know what the word modern is. And I know what an enterprise is. Well, you know what? Actually, let's start with that. What is an enterprise?
That's actually a really good question. I actually see that question asked even on Stack Overflow. And what it is, I kind of see two types of development shops or development teams a lot of times. And you have these small, I consider them more hipster kind of oriented, if you will, development things, and they tend to not...
They code ironically.
Very good, yeah, absolutely. But they tend not to do, say, C# and Microsoft Stack. They do more of a PHP or Apache or Ruby, and now the hot thing's Node. Mm-hmm. And then they tend to work on Macs, and they're really...
Those rebels.
Really are. And they and they do a whole lot of JavaScript and HTML5, CSS3... And they build a lot of their own tools, and those tools are really more open source oriented.
So all those tools you're talking about, they're not being done in big enterprises?
I wouldn't say the same degree. Okay. The great thing is you can actually take and use those tools in the enterprise world where, like I said, those places tend to have small teams. Enterprises can sometimes have small teams, and that's a relative term, but usually they tend to be larger teams.
Okay.
And there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of communication that needs to go on, and you know, a lot of enterprises say they're agile, but that just means they have a daily stand up,
right?
And they have a 12-month release cycle, which is still water. I call it water fragile.
Water.
So
got it.
So there's a
somebody say Scrum butt. I'm doing Scrum butt.
Scrum butt, but and the Scrum meetings usually take an hour or two every morning. And, a room of 50, 60 people.
It's like you're reading my mind.
Yes, I think we've all been there, especially as consultants. We get to see this a lot.
Okay, so these are some particular problems that enterprises team, you know, big organizations tend to have that maybe smaller agile organizations tend not to have.
Another thing in enterprises is you have a lot of legacy applications. You need to maintain, support, figure out a way to actually make work in today's modern world. And that's something I see a lot of enterprises really struggling with is – we've been building this web software basically the same way since the mid to late 90s.
Right.
And I call it the classic request response model. And now the world's really changed a whole lot because browsers have gotten a heck of a lot better. And we've gotten a lot of new, I think a lot of stuff coming out of that other crowd with, you saw jQuery emerge 4, 5, 6 years ago, really just pick up traction and momentum and just take the world by storm. And HTML5 is really starting to gather momentum, especially outside the enterprise. I want to see it really come into the enterprise quite a bit because I think next spring I'm calling it the coming enterprise apocalypse.
Apocalypse.
Yes. April 8th.
Fire and brimstone. Yeah, cats and dogs living together.
Yeah, I think April 8th is when Windows XP is officially unsupported at that point. That means there's
panicking.
Yeah, there's no more security updates, no more patches. Things like that, so that, what is it, I guess it's 13 or 14-year-old operating system is officially put in the same spot with classic cars.
So is that going to be a wake-up call then for IT managers to say, you know what, we really need to get off this?
I would hope so. While it's not as big a problem as I saw it a couple of years ago, I still see a lot of Windows XP in enterprises mixed with some Windows 7 that has just been recently rolled out kind of attitude.
Okay.
But on top of that, another big problem that kind of proliferates from the XP mentality is Internet Explorer 8. And that's a really bad thing. And most companies are like, well, we can't upgrade because we've got these internal line of business applications that only work in Internet Explorer 8. Okay. Half of them are built internally. Half of them are third parties. And I've been told over and over again, well, a third party vendor won't upgrade it.
Right, or they don't exist anymore.
And, you know, a lot of it is simple problems that they could probably pretty easily fix. But yet they're not willing to do enough research to do it or have somebody come in and kind of audit to see what kind of problems they might actually have and maybe come in and just fix them in a shorter amount of time and at the same time try to get their developer teams up to date all new stuff, because to me there's a lot of modern functionality in new browsers that enterprises can definitely leverage to cut cost, both in the development cycle and the overall running, ongoing cost of applications.
Sure.
Plus, I think they're putting themselves in a really...
F12 tools, for example.
Well, yeah, F12 tools have really matured. If you've seen the new Internet Explorer 11, they've actually rebuilt from the ground up all the developer tools in Internet Explorer. Chrome has got just a rich set of developer tools, and it kind of all started with Firebug and Firefox, mm-hmm. and I think that one's the one that's kind of started to get kind of deleted.
People don't talk about Firefox that much anymore.
Well, you know, I look at browser usage stats on a lot of different places, my own properties and stuff, and Firefox is getting down to that 1-2% level a lot of times. And that's kind of interesting. Chrome's basically about 45-55%, depending on which one you look at. And then the other part of that's Internet Explorer. And then you see a little Opera in there, here and there, and a few other little outline browsers with a little speck on the list and things like that. But mostly all these browsers are modern browsers.
Right.
Like one of the things, like I recently redid my entire blog as a modern single-page application. And I really struggle with how much of my effort I'm going to have to put in to make it work in, say, IE8.
Right.
I actually looked at the traffic on my blog, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but it was less than 1% was IE8 or 7.
You probably alienated them with some
blog
posts about
IE8. Part of me started thinking, well, that means that the average enterprise developer may not necessarily be reading blogs to learn how to do stuff. And so I'd be curious to actually look at some of my peers' blog stats to see if they have a similar thing. And another interesting, if you look at some of these like stat counters and the Kami and stuff, the data they make, you can actually see people go to work with the browser statistics.
Oh, yeah.
So 9 o'clock on Monday morning, there's a spike in Internet Explorer 8. 5 o'clock, it starts going down until it does this hump all week long until Saturday, and then nobody uses it on the weekend. And then Monday morning, 9 o'clock, it goes back up a little bit.
I see.
And so those are trends. I mean, basically you're forcing people to use something out of date that they don't even want to use. And another thing that's going to probably force the hand of IT on this is people are bringing their own device to work.
That's a good trend.
And I think this is another thing that IT departments en masse are looking the other way and not acknowledging. This past spring, I was sitting in a conference room talking to a main developer lead in a pretty large company. They had about 1,500 developers. And she said, our company doesn't have anybody bringing their own device. And I was looking over her shoulder out into the cube farm behind her at her developer team, and I saw 5 iPads, 2 Microsoft Surfaces. Everybody had a smartphone, and everybody was doing at least checking their email on those devices.
Right.
And to not acknowledge what's sitting right in front of her face spoke volumes to me. So, what I'm going to talk about today with the enterprise stuff is, you know, some of these issues, but also kind of get a little bit into some of the, some of the technical nuances of how do we, as enterprises, build kind of a workflow to build these modern web applications that are based around web standards and use a lot of JavaScript, because the more I'm pushing forward with modern stuff, the less I'm using the ASP.NET level.
Okay.
I build a lot of my websites now with one controller and maybe one or two views in them, and then I've got maybe one or two more controllers for web API.
In other words, you just serve up that main start page.
Exactly.
And after that, it's all services, all JavaScript.
I'm making calls to get JSON. I'm merging that data with templates on the client side, and I'm dynamically rendering all the markup and stuff.
Your URL is never changing. Your whole page is never refreshing.
Well, it depends. If you need deep linking to something, then I use the hashbang approach.
Okay.
If not, then you don't necessarily have to worry about it. But I just do it out of good practice.
Okay.
So it's one of those things I kind of point out you need to do. But that's a very scary thing for your traditional enterprise developer, because, you know, for a decade basically, ASP.NET world, we were all taught to, you know, a lot of times just drag a controller onto a page,
yep,
and essentially hook them together.
And then drag a data set onto the same page.
Exactly, and say that that's the data source. And,
yep.
And the days of that are kind of gone. And it's more, you know, a lot of enterprise applications can be written in Sublime or Notepad or a Web Matrix as alternatives to Visual Studio, because you don't need as much of the back-end stuff for that web layer. Now, the back end, what I call the back end, I think there's an inflection point there. Everything behind the API, that's still C# world.
Right.
And I see a lot of developers with that mentality that are going to be really good there. And one of the analogies that I like to use, and I think you'll appreciate, I'm a football fan. I actually got to play all the way through college.
Mm-hmm. Which NC State.
NC State, which is, you know, not something most people get the experience to kind of, you know, play organized football all the way up till you're 22 or something like that. And, you know, think about it. You know, you start off in Pop Warner and you're playing all kinds of positions all over the field and you're having fun, just goofing around. And then you get into junior high and high school. And by the time you're in varsity in high school, you may be a two-way athlete. You know, you may play like for me, I was the left guard and I was also the place kicker. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of guys would be defensive tackle and offensive tackle, or right. linebacker and fullback or something like that.
You don't see a lot of offensive linemen that are place kickers, but okay.
It was a little passion of mine. So, but you know, as I got into college, you know, everybody had a position.
Yeah.
And
you need to specialize.
You specialized in that position. Now you may have been a wide receiver that also returned punts, or a defensive back that caught kickoffs. That kind of thing. But generally, if you're an offensive lineman, the best thing you're going to do on special teams is be that front line on the kickoff return.
Right.
And you're going to run back 5 yards, turn around, and that's about it. The rest of it, you're focusing on how to read a defensive line and how to make a trap block or something. And you're going to get really good at making that trap block. And I think the web and the whole technology as a whole has progressed to now we're not so much in high school anymore. We can do the front end and the back end. We need to kind of pick sides and pick a position that we want to go and want to specialize in and be really good. And I think enterprises need to recognize that they need people to just focus on their front end stuff and make that really optimized, as well as the back end, because now especially when you got a consumer facing thing. I was talking to somebody I was at jQuery conference this week in Austin, and mm-hmm. I had a great time, but I got to talk to a lot of developers, and a lot of them were enterprise developers, which I was extremely happy to see, because really thought this was going to be more of the Mac boutique shop kind of developer.
Well, you know what changed that is because jQuery is in the box of Visual Studio.
Well, that's a big part of it. You're absolutely right.
People think that Microsoft developers don't want to go outside of Microsoft world.
Exactly.
It's not really true. But they don't like to go outside of Visual Studio.
Well, and the ASP.NET team has done, I think, a really great job of finding a lot of these open source libraries like that and trying to expose the average developer to that.
Yep,
NuGet
does a lot of help for that, but it all started with jQuery.
Really. Yeah, it really did. The jQuery has done so much to push us forward.
Yep.
And, you know, when it came out, the browsers were very kind of uneven, if you will. Mm-hmm. But now they've really flattened out, and they're very consistent with their APIs and performance is really seriously on par. I mean, you can look at different tests, and each browser makes their own test, and they're always good at their own test. But
right.
I actually saw a lot of talked to a lot of developers that weren't Microsoft shops; they were Java shops and things like that, which I don't normally get to talk to. That was really good. But you know, I was talking to one of them. And it's a big national brand here in the U.S., and it's a site that I'm on a lot because they use their product. I'll put it that way. And I've had a lot of problems with them, being the kind of web geek that I am, just seeing a lot of bad practices. And and I was really glad to have the conversation with him, because he was telling me, like, yeah, we realized finally. And they pulled me out of the back end, and now I've got a team that's dedicated to fixing the front end.
Ah, okay.
And I was, like, just going. I was wanting to do cartwheels talking to him, you know. So That's a really good sign, and I hope more enterprises are looking that direction.
I guess I don't think those small shops are specializing in one skill set. I mean, they only have, if you've got a shop of two or three people, you really have to have multiple hats.
Yeah, you really do.
Why are you holding enterprises more accountable to that standard?
Well, I think enterprises tend to, part of it's because a lot of business applications. I've started doing math on how much time is wasted on applications running slow. Mm-hmm. And, it's a cost factor there. And it kind of goes back. My graduate thesis was on activity-based costing. Basically, I measured how much energy it took to manufacture different things and stuff. So there's kind of that part to me. But, so there's that line of business thing, making business more efficient so they can either be profitable or charge less or expand or whatever they want to do with their capital. The other side of it is a lot of them have a consumer-facing presence, like this particular company. And their site, because I actually monitor it and break it down a lot for fun, it was taking 8.5 seconds on average to load, to actually be usable. And that's, right now, it's 1 second is what people expect. If you're over 1 second, that blood pressure starts increasing,
you're likely to go somewhere else.
Right. Well, and, you know, there's been studies. 4% of people have actually thrown their phone waiting on a website to load. So that means that this New York Code Camp, which, what, there are 300, 400, 500 people here?
I'm not sure exactly. It's in the hundreds for sure.
I would say at least a dozen people here have thrown a phone waiting on a website to load on their phone. Rachel, have you thrown your phone?
Yes, I have.
We have friends, so which is technology and friends, right? So.
My phone is broken, but that's not why.
So, I mean, that's a very real thing. I mean, it's not necessarily hard to find somebody who's gotten extremely frustrated with something like that.
Okay, so
enterprises should have
we're talking big money, we're talking big projects.
They should have the resources to make things and do things well according to best practices.
So, while we mentioned cost, what the big thing that keeps enterprises or anybody really from migrating these legacy applications to something that's better, more modern, mm-hmm. is the fact that there's so much in these things, so much logic inside of these things. It's a huge cost.
Yes.
To try to rewrite this thing.
Right.
Do you have any advice for those?
Yeah, I mean, most likely it's because they didn't follow best practices at the time they built it.
That's true, but it's too late to change that right now.
Well, here's an opportunity to change it.
Okay.
I mean, you're right. We have things that are too tightly coupled in the client side.
For example, yeah.
And I was talking to...
That button one underscore click method that's 2,000 lines long?
I had one of those not too long ago.
I
inherited one and I went, oh, it was 2,500 lines. Though, but you know, I had that conversation with... I had one last week with a person I know that works at another major consumer brand here in the world. And he's like, yeah, we're trying to fix our website. He's like, but you would not believe how much of the back-end logic is built into the web layer.
Yeah.
And he's like, every day we're peeling a little bit back. More
so that,
and more.
That's really the approach I think people need to take, is they need to just make it a little bit better each day.
Yeah.
Just attack it, start to refactor it,
right.
Get some tests
around. And you have to. There are some basic things I see that you can fix. Like a lot of companies will have the little meta tag in there to force IE7's view engine, for example. Take that out. That's not even going to be supported in IE11.
Okay.
That's going away. They're not going to have compatibility mode anymore. They kind of gave people too much time with that, I think.
I see. Okay.
A lot of those sites actually are not JavaScript heavy at this point. Hmm. If you think about it, they're still in that request response model, and there's not a whole lot of JavaScript to them. But, you know, simple things like just combining and minifying scripts will help their site go significantly faster. Putting the scripts at the bottom, not having 40 script references in a page and 20 CSS files and, you know, kind of knowing how to optimize images. These are just little basic things. A site that takes 8.5 seconds to load, you could probably spend a week or two and you could knock 6 seconds off pretty fast.
Right.
You know, and also that lowers your cost of doing business too, because now your servers aren't running as hard, you don't have to ship as much data down the wire. There's other little things that happen. And you start, one thing I've kind of noticed is you start doing what I call best practices developed, like, for lack of a better term, you kind of naturally kind of fall into those kind of practices, like organizing your code better is one thing. That's one of the things I want to talk about, in fact, today, is how to structure your file project so you've got the scripts and stuff in a way that you can maintain it. So standard thing that I think a lot of developers have done, and I've been really guilty of it, is, say, have your entire application as JavaScript in one file. Just one big giant file. You got to realize if we're working on a team of 10, and you got 8 of us with that same file checked out,
it's
working on
to
this,
merge those.
It's a giant merge. So I've learned to make little tiny script files, and I know how to extend a JavaScript library a whole lot better than I did 4 years ago. It's little things like that that can mean a whole lot, because you know you got these source control things you got to deal with, right?
Right.
You got the communication that I was talking about, so. So, Dave, you're going to go work on function foo. I'm going to work on function bar. Fortunately, they're in two different files. We're not going to worry about stepping on each other. And we can, you know, check those things in, and the project will kind of magically merge. And then how do we build? We've had continuous build mentality for a while, which is good. But now we've got this JavaScript thing, which doesn't have a C# compiler.
Right.
So how
do
we do that? Well, you know, you got tools like Grunt. And there's like, continuous integration tools that you can hook these kind of tools into. I can't think of the names off the top of my head. That's kind of where I stop, and I'll let like a DevOps person kind of take over.
Cruise control or MS build, even things like that.
Actually, there's a lot of newer ones. They're really tailored more to the what I call the modern web stuff. But I use Grunt for a lot of my tasks. Grunt.js. And, you know, it's one of those JavaScript open source things. It's built on top of Node, and it kind of self-installs itself with the npm kind of thing. Which if you're not familiar with npm, that's very similar to NuGet.
Okay. It's a package manager.
It's a package manager. So you basically install Node, then you can install Grunt with the npm manager, and then you install the extensions to Grunt, which are basically like jQuery plugins for Grunt. And so, like, I've got one. There's a whole contrib library, which is really good. So I use Uglify. They're great names. Uglify, Minify. I'm starting to use the JS Hint, which basically is a syntax checker for your C# JavaScript. Mm-hmm. Visual Studio is getting really good with, like, static checking of your syntax and stuff right. like C# and not C#, but JavaScript and CSS. And, you know, the WebEssential tools that they've been Mads is building outside of the kind of out of band, so to speak, but those are awesome, you know, especially with the CSS validation and organizing and making sure you've got the right rules in there and you covered all the bases. He's done a fantastic job with that, and that keeps getting extended more and more now that he's open sourced it. So So there's a lot of great tools for the Visual Studio crowd.
Okay. That's a lot of information.
Yeah, it is.
You're going to pack that all into an hour. That's, I wish I could see it, but I'm speaking actually at the same time.
Exactly, yeah. There's a lot of great talks here this week.
You're doing a lot of speaking these days, right?
That's a relative thing.
What's coming up for you?
Well, I'm going to be at Dev Connections.
I'll be there.
Yeah, that's right. So Chandradal and I are going to do a workshop on building an enterprise application.
Fantastic.
That first Sunday. And so we've got about 7 hours that we're structuring to basically take you from nothing to at least a viable thing and kind of get you into practice of using these kind of principles.
Okay, that's like September 30th or something like
the
that.
The last day of September into the first till the first Thursday of November. October. And then I've got three talks. I'm doing basically a similar talk to what I'm doing today. I'm doing one on web performance optimization, and then one that kind of falls out of this talk and goes a little deeper into the testing and debugging side of it, more how to use things like Grunt to actually put that into your work process so you have better code.
Let's talk about Grunt when we get to Las Vegas.
Well, all right, sounds
like
great.
We'll show on that.
We'll do that. It's got a great logo. I love it. All right,
thanks
Dave.
So much.
Thank you. Coming up at 11, technology with friends.